It's great fun to be back. As you may know, having seen me before, I'm from Vermont. I live in a tiny town called Braintree, Vermont, with 800 people and many, many cows. And I live on a dairy farm where I compose this music and most of the music that's been played here. It's about a 2.5 hour drive, and I enjoy coming down here. It's wonderful for me to be able to test out my new orchestral work amongst friends. So that's what we've been doing. A few years ago, I had an idea that it would be nice to combine poetry with instrumental music, not songs, but to be just the played music. And the idea is that a poem would be read and then some music would be played. And it's up to the listener to find a connection between the two. And it could be a very small literal connection, just a word being displayed in the music, or perhaps the whole sentiment of the poem filling the music. So that's been a new idea for me. And I've tried a few projects like this. I have a Robert Frost piece, which I know has been on the radio. And I decided to do a piece with Emily Dickinson poetry, so what better orchestra than the Holyoke Orchestra to perform this work, the Holyoke Symphony, as I must remember. And David was very enthusiastic about this. When working with poetry and instrumental music, I was used to using just chamber music, a small ensemble. So I started out thinking about using just a chamber orchestra, but David said, no, 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 we have a large brass section and they're very good. And I thought, oh no, what do I do with this delicate poetry with brass? So what you'll hear today, because there are five poems, is the first one is just chamber orchestra, because it's a delicate movement about her letters going off into space. But then I got more and more bold about using the brass, until by the end, the brass almost take over the whole piece. So that was my process of deciding that I could indeed express poetry, even delicate poetry, using all the brass and winds in addition to the strings. So now we're going to have a little introduction whereby some of the fragments of the poetry and the music will be displayed as examples. Is that right? Are we ready for that? Okay, we worked this out, so let's hope this works the way it should. The first movement of poems is called Letters to the World. This is my letter to the world that never wrote to me. So some of the images that I thought of when I read this poem that I liked would be just the theme. This is my letter to the world that never wrote to me. A rhythm like that. So that is a way of putting those words to music without singing them. Then I had the idea of the letters, her poems, just little pieces of paper that were sort of floating off out into the world on the breeze. So we have some little music here is like the letters going off in air. There we go. She sent out her poems, and then, of course, she was always afraid that people would judge harshly and not accept her poems. So that was the first movement. She's just giving this a try as a poet. The second movement has to do with spring. A light exists in spring. I love that, and I'm waiting for that. So in order to deal with the word light, I thought of one of my favorite instruments, a percussion instrument, the glockenspiel, which will be the light, and then some of the woodwinds are going to have little specks of light. That was it? That was a little speck of light? Indeed. And then, of course, spring not only has images of light, it is, to me, a time of joy and energy. I really love spring, so I decided to use some rhythms. And do the brass play in this time? Yeah. This was me getting into the spirit of joy and energy of spring. Exactly. exactly how I feel when the sun finally comes out and the mud starts to dry up on my road and I can go outside. So that's very literal. The third poem is called I'm Nobody, and it's one of Emily Dickinson's funniest poems. And when your wonderful reader reads it, you'll understand what I have in mind. But some of the images from this I'm Nobody have to do with a frog in a bog, or maybe more than one frog in maybe more than one bog. But I decided to give the frog to my very favorite instrument, the tuba. Can we have another frog? And this entire movement takes place by the pond, the bog. The bog has lots of other creatures. It has crickets. And also mosquitoes. We finally found a use for the violin bow. Many dead mosquitoes will end up at the end of this movement. Recovering from that, we shall have passion. We have wild nights, as in nighttime nights. And for this, the images in this poem have to do with the ocean, with waves, the boat rocking on the waves, passion, and the bowing of the bows. So let's hear that. You have to pay close attention to this music and watch, too, because I try to have things that are visual. And so we have very energetic playing in this movement. At the end of the poem and the end of this piece, the passion subsides as a boat settles into its mooring gently. And I use another one of my favorite instruments way back, the maracas. These are going to rock right into the mooring, the boat settling down. As the boat settles and the poem ends. The last poem and the last movement is called Indian Summer. And that has to do with autumn, but with the fullness of autumn when it's still warm and all the ripeness of the harvest and leaves which have started to come off the trees are flying around. And I believe the poem uses scurrying leaves. So this first section will depict scurrying leaves. And then, for autumn, it's a celebration of fullness, of the harvest, of wine, and the end of summer. And so I had grandeur and even chords that open up, sounds that fill out. So we'll hear that now. There we go. You have a thumbnail sketch of the entire piece, Muse of Amherst. And when you listen to the full piece, perhaps you'll spot these little hints, or perhaps they'll help you in your enjoyment. Thank you, David, and the orchestra. That was very well done.